I am so happy to see all of you here tonight. It's quite a full house. I want to welcome the Emerging Leadership Sangha Training folks as well. They've been here since Thursday. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're joining us tonight. We're continuing. This is the second night of us talking about everyday verses and vows. Last week we talked about the robe verse. This week I want to talk about the kinds of verses that, I think we just kind of pick up in practice. I know one of my practices is I actually keep a collection of those kinds of phrases. I keep them on note cards at my desk. I have a pile about this thick, and I rotate through them. I have a little stand, and every once in a while I just move the next one forward and say, What's here? What's there to practice with? I find that the stack kind of is this ever-changing set of inspiration. I think it's aspiration. I think that it's a grounding point. We need lots of help remembering to practice and how to practice and what we're going for. We need reminders to bring us back to those intentions that we hold dear. I've had many sources over the years for these verses. I've collected them from books that I've read. Several quotes I remember because I read on the back where I got them from. I got from Tricycle's Daily Dharma. Let's get their daily newsletter where it's usually just like a phrase and then you can click through and read the whole article if you want. Highly recommended. I was amazed how often there were teachings that I then had to go track down after a Dharma talk, after a Sunday or Wednesday Dharma talk. I had to go find, where was that from? What was that about? I brought a few that I'm just going to start with tonight. During our discussion last Wednesday, we were talking about the robe verse, and I overheard some folks kind of struggling a little bit with that line, the formless field of benefaction, like this formlessness, like what does that mean? And I kind of offered a slightly different definition than people may have heard. I'm going to offer another definition tonight, and the line goes something like this. I think it'll, whether you were there or not, I think you'll appreciate the verse here. The verse goes, to see, we must forget the name of the thing that we're looking at. And that comes from the famous Zen scholar Claude Monet. Kagmyo gave a talk last year about the three terrible oaths. How many people know the three terrible oaths? No, not so many. It turns out another thing I noticed in looking through all of these phrase cards is that I like exclamation marks. I'm a big fan. If they have an exclamation mark, I like saving those. So if you don't know the three terrible oaths, they are, whatever happens, may it happen. Whichever way it goes, may it go that way. There is no purpose. So you can work with that one on your own time. And then it was even wonderful in this lead into the talk that on Sunday, at Sunday's Dharma talk, Kiyoshi gave a talk on impermanence, and he had handouts. He was actually giving out verses to people, which I absolutely loved. We did not coordinate that, but I was very happy that you could go up and get it. I'm going to read you the verse because I think it's a wonderful lead-in to what I want to actually work on in a little more depth tonight. This is from Suzuki Roshi, from his book Not Always So, which is a collection of his Dharma talks. And he says this to his students. He says, I feel sorry that I cannot help you very much. But the way to study true Zen is not verbal. Just open yourself and give up everything. Whatever happens, whether you think it's good or bad, study closely and see what you find out. This is the fundamental attitude. This is what it means to surrender, even though you have nothing to surrender. Without losing yourself by sticking to a particular rule or understanding, keep finding yourself moment after moment. This is the only thing for you to do. Study closely and see what you find out. How many different ways have we heard that teaching? How many different ways have we been told, study the Buddha, study the self. But Buddhism is deeply concerned with this question of how do we experience the world? How do we do that? A simple question like, what is this? Like right now, what is this? What is this we're doing right now? On the surface seems so straightforward, and to really practice with that question becomes something very different. We find that that answer changes if we're careful, if we notice that it changes literally moment by moment, as does our satisfaction. That changes moment by moment. And we need to notice that changing. We need to keep finding ourselves moment after moment. That's what Suzuki said. And we need to build that capacity. We need to build that capacity to be able to do that. It takes practice. So we're going to build that capacity a little bit tonight, just a little bit more. If there was a name for my talk this week, it would be called Mountain, Ocean, Sky. And it is based on an old Tibetan teaching. I remember Bukai, who's one of the retired teachers here at Dharma Rain. I remember learning it from her in a Dharma talk, a Sunday Dharma talk. She credited Ken MacLeod, if anybody knows the Tibetan teacher, at Unfettered Mind. And I want to credit him because I borrow heavily from him tonight. So just want you to take a moment, kind of center yourself. So the first line of this teaching is body like a mountain. So I'm interested, and I'm interested in your answer. When I say that, when you hear that, what's the first thing that comes to mind? Anybody?
Strong.
Strong, yeah.
Stable.
Immovable. Yeah.
Steadfast.
Grounded,
yeah.
Massive,
right? Was there one more?
Ecosystem,
yeah, okay. I like all of those, and I always think to myself, like, that solidness, like how much work is the mountain doing to be solid? Like, how hard is it trying? Like, is it trying to hold itself still? I don't think so. I mean, how much effort is really being exerted? I'm such a fan of this image because there's such a quality of being to it, of just being. And I want to see if we can maybe practice with that for a minute. So we're going to do some meditation tonight. And I want to see if we could practice with this beingness of body like a mountain. So start to shift kind of your awareness to the body senses. Like, what are you sensing? Sight and sound and smell. What that feels like. And I need a bell. It's a body like a mountain. Notice the stillness that's already there.
Is this on? Oh, okay, cool. My name's Jared. I feel like I really got fixated on the triangle shape. You know, when you think of mountain, generally it's a little more literal. And as I was just kind of sitting in that, I started feeling more about my interconnectedness to the floor, you know, the base of it, and just how that, I guess you said the stillness of it, just kind of the stillness of that inner being right there. And we're just sat in that for a minute. It was nice.
That actually came up here in a quick conversation. Mm. Like Zazen posture has that very triangular.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
Move along here. Andy, it was interesting because I immediately got to like the solid big stuff, and then my brain's like, no, go the opposite direction. On mountains, there's little details. There's little critters, and there's a wind blowing at the top, and there's rivers that run down, and there's trees, and there's moss, and there's pebbles. And so I thought, wow, on this mountain, there's all these little, there's the big stuff, but there's also the little stuff. And that's kind of just, I just followed that path and ended up there. Unintentionally, it just took me there. It was interesting to go on that ride. Because it's just made up of small things when you really think of it. It looks like a big thing, but it's actually trillions of small things.
Suho, is your mic on?
When you said something like, how hard is the mountain trying? I had such a feeling of like, I don't know, maybe it's really trying hard.
Could be.
Mountain consciousness is so different than mine, and sometimes they do move really dramatically. Like a volcano right before it's about to explode, maybe there's a lot of effort there.
Uh-huh. Okay. So, that could be true. Now I have to think about that. But what I was thinking about, what I wrote down next actually, was how fortunate we are that we have mountain imagery, like visible from us, like in the city, like Mount St. Helens, right? Mount Hood. We're equally fortunate that we're only an hour from the ocean, right? The next line of this is breath like the ocean. Breath like the ocean. The traditional teaching is actually breath like the wind, but I like this slight change to breath like the ocean. It feels a little more intuitive to me. It feels like something I kind of recognize a little bit more. I think there's a rhythm to it that really matches a kind of a calm state. You know, when I think about the waves, that kind of that coming in and that going out, we talk a lot about rising and falling in Buddhism, kind of has that quality. And I'm amazed how often I notice that my breath changes when I'm at the ocean. Like it kind of meets that. It meets that rhythm of what's happening. When I'm practicing with this line, like the visuals are like just so clear to me. I can hear the waves, I can see it. We always seem to be looking for reminders that kind of life is not static. Life is a verb. It's a process, it's activity, it's movement, it's ever changing. And we seem to always want to make it solid. We want to hang on to it. One of the reasons that we often recommend following the breath as you're learning Zazen is that it's always there. It's always available. You can always use it. And we can always be reminded of that coming and going, and that it can be there to help. The breath is also interesting because it's always changing. It's another place that we can place our awareness and just notice how much the quantity and qualities vary. I heard one of the other teachers tell a story recently that there was a Zen master who said they could sense every breath as unique and different from the next. A Zen master. I thought that I found that very interesting. So we're going to work with this a little bit. I want to acknowledge that I've heard people say that the breath can be hard to practice with, that can be challenging. And so as we go into this next exercise, just engage with it in whatever way works best for you. So what I want you to do for this next piece is I want you to try to hold that body as a mountain, whether solid or exploding. And I want you to also kind of pick up this breath like the ocean. Let the breath just kind of flow out, flow in, flow out. So body like a mountain, breath like the ocean. Let your breath rise and fall like waves on the ocean. Pair up with your partner again and talk about that a little bit.
I have never.
Last time I asked for people who wanted to talk, that didn't work. So maybe people who don't want to talk, who doesn't want to share what they just shared?
I don't want to.
Yes, perfect. Die guy.
Hi.
Hi.
So, you know, this one really lent itself well to temperature, you know, like the cool air coming into the nose, like the wave coming up out of the ocean.
Yeah.
And then the wave warms up a little bit on the flat sand and, you know, goes back to the sea and your warm air comes out of your nostrils. Cool in, warm out. Mm. Oh, I'm thinking about something else. Oh, wait. Cool in, warm out. That was it. It was really very relaxing.
Yeah. I like that a lot. Thank you.
I'm Lulu, and so breath like the ocean. First, I tried to start with my breath, and I felt a lot of pain in my breath and in my body, you know, trying to be present with it, not get rid of it. And it kind of just connected to the greater awareness I currently have of the pollution in our ocean and how there's pain in my breath. And there's also a lot of pain in the ocean right now. And I tried to like shift it, try to make it more positive. But for me right now, I felt very connected with the grief in my breath and the grief in the ocean. Hmm. And there was a lightness in that too. So yeah, that's what I have to share. Thanks.
Thank you. One more?
This is Christina. I initially didn't want to share because Mess and I both had the experience of being pre-distracted during this portion, and we were reflecting on how the mountain is very like focusing of energy, and the ocean is like a little more like wandering body experience or mental experience for me this time. Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's go to the last one. I'll be interested in hearing how this one lands then, based on what you just said, and if other people have had that experience. The last one is mind like the sky. Mind like the sky. So how big's the sky? I think this is another one of those that we're, again, really lucky here in the Pacific Northwest, that there's so many places to experience how big the sky is. When I think of mind like the sky, it's again a really powerful image for me. I feel some boundaries dissolve, and I feel a lot of that space that there might be room for everything. Is the sky bothered by the clouds that float through it? Even if we see nothing but clouds, which is, again, something that happens a lot here in the Pacific Northwest, the sky's still there. I want to say something about mind, too, because it's something that McLeod calls out in his teaching. Mind is a little bit of a tricky word in the Western context. There's lots of really deep associations with thought and with the brain, with our heads, with consciousness. The cultures that Buddhism developed in used words that had really different boundaries. They had much less definition around it. In Sanskrit, the word is citta, as in bodhicitta, for people who are familiar with that term. It means both mind and heart. Like they're inseparable. The Tibetan word is sem. In Chinese and Japanese, the word is shin. And I've spent the last few years spending a lot of time with translations in a study group here at Dharma Rain, and the the best we normally get with this translation is we get mind, or maybe we get heart mind, kind of a hyphenated, like heart dash mind. And I don't think it does justice for what we're trying to practice with there. So for this segment, I want you to try to think about both mind like the sky and heart like the sky. See which one lands for you, maybe which one lands more deeply. Maybe also try to hold both and see what arises. So body like a mountain, breath like the ocean, heart, mind like the sky. So we're gonna do this one quick. Got about 6 minutes left. So a quick back and forth with your partner, and then we'll close. Okay, one or two people.
It was nice to note, this is Onyo, how well all three work together, that if my body is like a mountain and my breath is the ocean, then of course my mind is the sky.
Of course. No, really.
No, really.
Sincerely, right?
Yeah. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Thank you.
I'm Brett. I noticed that if I focused on my mind being like the sky and kind of expanding the periphery of my mind, if I had a thought, I could expand away from it and it would just shrink and drop, mm-hmm. which was really interesting.
Yeah. That spaciousness there.
Yeah.
That spaciousness. Yeah. One more.
A formless field of benefaction.
A formless field of benefaction for the people who were here last week. Here's what I'd end with. I think over time, the way that this teaching has just really landed with me is there's a different experience as those words drop away. Right? When that body as a mountain becomes a kind of stillness that you can just find, and that breath like the ocean is kind of this steady rising and falling. A different kind of dependability almost in that. And as we said, that spaciousness of mind that's available in heart. Like when I started practicing with that, it really shifted my, it wasn't this that was happening, it was something really different, much more whole body, so. Thanks for working with me tonight. We're gonna do Vespers now. Yeah.